Interview with Ruth Minnie. When were you born, and what were some of your earliest childhood memories?
I was born 1908, January the 2nd. And I remember when I was real little, it was real cold, and my mother had some company. And I think it was the Snowbirds were over, and they had a little wee baby that was smaller than me, and it was a little boy baby. And the ladies were all around changing its pants, and I was there in a little underskirt with my, it was real cold in January. And this old father was changing, it went way up in the air and went on the stove, and all the ladies laughed. Oh, they got a big kick out of that little baby being on the stove, you know. And I was getting provoked. I was real little, I must have been about 2 years old, 2½, I remember, because I was. And I run outside with nothing on except my little skirt, and barefoot, and down the road, and there was big ruts in it, like where it's frozen, and the ground is frozen. I must have run about 2 blocks. And they had to run outside to get me. I'll never forget that. I was so cold, you know, but you don't care when you're little. You just keep going, going, going. I'll never forget that. That was one thing that I wasn't getting enough attention, see. The other little boy baby was getting all the attention. And then that's, then another time I remember I cut my foot on a bottle. And boy, my foot was bleeding. I was just little, about 3, 4 years old. Walked all the way home in that, and I used to wonder what I was doing there. There's my mother and father supposed to be, but I wondered what I was doing there. I couldn't get out of my head that who I was or what I was. Even as little as I was, I wondered what I was doing there. So I don't remember that. And later on, we lived in Detroit there on the 21st and 40th. We had a grocery store. And on Sunday, when the store would be closed, we'd learn how to roller skate up and down the store. And that was on. And then the policemen, them days, used to stand by the stove and get warm in the store, you know, to see. And we would hide, and then we would see, and we'd say, brass and buttons and blue coats, can't catch an antidote or something stupid. Like that. We didn't feel funny. But that's the kids for them, they do stupid things like that. Then I went to the Webster School in Detroit. I don't know if that was on 21st and 4th down there. Or the Wingert School. It was one or the other. Webster or Wingert. I don't remember. I went to the Holy Redeemer. I went to St. Anne's. I should be well educated. Then come to Monroe and go to St. Mary's. Then the Monroe Business University taught me off.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Depression and what it was like?
Depression in the 1918, I think it was 17, the First World War. Yeah, nobody could have any sugar. Just to a family was about a half a pound of sugar. Nobody could get any sugar. I remember that. Everything was on our oatmeal. We used to have syrup and honey. We could get that, but we couldn't get any sugar. But otherwise, we didn't notice. I mean, the children didn't notice it much. We were praying night and day that my dad wouldn't have to go to war. No, he was just the age to go to war. And we stole the store in Detroit then, so Papa wouldn't have to go. Mama thought if she run the store, they might say, well, your husband, you can take him, because you got a visit you can take care of, you know. So that's when we sold the store and moved out. We moved at 585 Military then. And then Grandpa died, and after that, we thought we'd have to live in Monroe and take care of Grandma, or let Grandma live with us out in the old homestead, but she never did. She only stayed with Aunt Lucille, her younger daughter. She had 6 kids, and she liked that, take care of the kids and do all that stuff.
Do you remember any of the Monroe Piers? Like,
oh,
there?
Yes, we used to go to the Monroe Piers on the streetcar, get it on the Ellen and the Pulp there, catch it. And boy, that was fun riding on it. It was all open. I used to take Violet with me. She was about 2 years old. and I'd want her to enjoy the scenery and take my little kids with me. I thought that was great. And she'd go to sleep all the time on the car. But that was wonderful, the riding the piers on the car. That was wonderful. And the bathhouse out there, that was all wonderful. When you stopped that was sad. That was really sad. Too bad they couldn't keep things like that. You know, it's just too bad.
That would be nice to have now, so kids don't get in trouble nowadays.
Oh, yes. To have back to ride out there, oh, it would be wonderful. And then we used to go fishing out in the marshes where the lily ponds are, those lilies. You know, the little water lilies. We'd go fishing out there for sun bass, rock bass, and all those kind of fish. Then we used to go to Stryver's Boathouse and rent the boats and go out there fishing for the day. That was fun. That was a long time ago.
What were your parents like, and where did they come from?
Oh, I'm from here in Monroe. My dad lived on Adams Street, right by St. Michael's Church. He was born there, and my mother was born in Macomb Street out here. Big corner there for the Mercy Hospital, the old Mercy Hospital. His house is still there. She lived there. And Papa was a motor, so when he got married, he moved to Detroit. That's how we happened to go to Detroit. So for the first 10 years they were married while we lived in Detroit. We moved to Monroe when I was about 9 years old. And that was come out here in the country with no electricity, no water, running water, outdoor toilet and lamps, coal stoves. See, Detroit, we had all that. You know, running water and a furnace and everything. And here in the country, we didn't have that there. But that was nice. Didn't like it. Of course, it must have been hard for my mother. That's when we used to wash on the board, you know. No electric wash machine then. She didn't get one a wash machine till I was 13. She got her first wash machine. And boy, she was happy with that.
Can you remember anything about the World War I, or did it have any effect on your family of any sort?
No, that not just about the sugar and the shortage of food. There was not a whole lot of food, they said, that day. Yeah. Remember the tracks used to stop at the door? I was on an Easter, and we got a whole mess of carp eggs from somebody. I don't know who got them. And we had carp egg sandwiches, and Mama made each of those hobos, each two big carp egg sandwiches. And they're delicious, those eggs, you know, they're cooked with onion and everything. They're heavenly. So anyway, that's all we had to eat, I mean, you know, like that. And she gave them to them. We watched them go down the street with their bag, put it in a bag for them. They sat down under a tree and ate them, and every bite we could watch them eat, you know. There were a lot of traps in days. And any time they stopped the door, you know, you'd feed them whatever you had. You didn't have anything like, but that was scary though, because Detroit or something, Mama would say, now, you gotta watch them, see that they don't mark the buildings. They used to mark the buildings, that was for another trap to stop. Meant they got something to eat there. It's a good place for you to stop, you know. So after they'd be gone, we'd go out and look around the store if there's any marks on it. We'd wipe them off with this chalk or what. Because we didn't want all them tracks to stop, you know. We don't mind feeding something, but not all Detroit. So it was, I remember that part of it. And then the time when Lillian, who was still in the store when she was kidnapped, and my gosh, come home, where was Lillian? She was kidnapped. We used to look all over the box for her, and look, some man got a hold of her. Don't know who it was. And pretty soon after we got looking for a couple hours, after Lillian running down the street, there she was making a split. She was about 4 years old, and that was a big scare. And Mama told us about the boogeyman and that for so long that I'd see anybody come out of a barn, I would run.
Did she just escape, or did he let her go?
She got away from him some way. She said she got away from him. He went over to wait, and she was going through that barn or someplace. garage, I don't know, but she'd run them, and she knew. The worst thing, yeah, she got away, but that, she was lucky. Because that days, them days, it was terrible things happening. You don't hear it like now, but we did there, just so... We lived on, I think it was military. They were a block from our store. The grocery man was shot and killed. Them days. Shot and killed behind the counter. Then another time, the little boy was found out in the field. It was, what you call it, his hands folded up like this, with that sticking up, they cut him off. And that was not far from our house. All those terrible things are happening them days. You didn't hear, you know, we had no TV, radio, or paper. Once in a while, you get the news, you know, it was happening right around you. People were scared to walk out them days, just like they are now. You go down the block, you had somebody go with you, you know. It was just as scary. That's what Mama was glad, like that part, to get out of Detroit. These kids was growing up from that. So we moved for military, then out in the country. Then after that, uptown, East Front Street. Then from there, we went to 320 Wadsworth, or Portland Wadsworth, and 3rd. We were there for 2 years, and I'm Nova, so we lived for.
Was it any different during the Second World War?
Was it different, you say?
Yeah.
Oh, then we prayed Sir Russell wouldn't have to go. Well, we had 10 kids then, and he maybe wouldn't have to go anyway, you know. Because he only had 10 kids. It's quite a bit for the government to pay. They had to pay him, so he never did get a... We're just as glad we never had to go. He was old enough to go, 38. He could have left, you know. But he didn't have to go, so that was... And the kids are all too little to go, so thank God for that then, David, you know. In between the wars, of course, Vietnam, Air Raymond was. He's the only one in our family that ever had a good war. He was in combat, and you know, he shot down. Raymond's the only one.
Did a lot of people get drafted back then?
Oh, yeah. Just like now, like they were young. Oh, a lot of people were drafted. Everybody was drafted. I mean, you had to sign up like when you're 18. But not everybody got a notice, like you said. Most of them did. Ones that could go, ones that couldn't, flat feet or you're blind or you're something wrong, they couldn't take you. They'd take you if they could, though. Never forgot the day when the First World War was over. The man across the street, he came over and says, "Isn't it a wonderful and glorious feeling? The war is over," he said. War, he had 10 kids too. That was Mr. Livermice. He had a big family. "Isn't it wonderful?" He just felt like kissing the ground, you know. It was so wonderful feeling. The war was over. It was such a terrible war. We thought that was a war to end all wars, and yet there was another war, Secretary War, bombing Pearl Harbor, boy, oh boy. Tom was a month older than that happened. On the 7th of November, and 7th of December, remember that, Jesus? Bombing Pearl Harbor, and the you don't. Do you remember that? How old was you? 5? 7?
Was the religion the same back then as it is now?
Oh yeah, more strict. Now it's too bad. You gotta believe like we were taught, Geneva. Believe and keep the faith as God said. Once you, there's gonna be so many changes. But to keep the faith, what you've been taught, you keep the faith. You know the faith. It's the true faith, the only faith. And the others are all strings from it. You know, the people don't like this, they don't like that, they don't like this, and they get out of it. You know, oh, any excuse they'll use, you know, oh, the priest doesn't talk to them today. And in other words, they cut their nose off to spite their face, you know. It's so stupid that it don't make sense. thank God I get on my knees, thank God every day that I'm a Catholic. Was born Catholic. I mean, really, everybody doesn't have that privilege. You know, and there's, oh, gosh. It's so wonderful to know, and thank God there's a God in which you know, and you're brought up with the true faith, you know, and you think of all that's going around you, half of it, and not just, you know, taking what they believe, what they like to believe. It's so wrong. Like some of the priests, they want to be married, but God said you can't serve man and God at the same time. You're either going to serve one and like them, or have the other and hate them, or you've got to concentrate on God. If you have a wife, you're concentrating on your wife or your husband. When you don't have that, you're concentrating on God, or you should be, and you're teaching them in the priest, on the sacraments, on everything like that. Once you are a priest, you'll always be a priest. You're not a priest. Messing around. If they ever come and make a law that's the priest in the Mary, you know it's a bad pope. You'll know that. Because they can't. I have to serve God and serve man at the same time. You know, like the priest. Look at the priests now, they're having trouble. Half of them, you know, are their poor souls or alcoholics, or they're doing this and they're trying to straighten themselves out. What the heck would it be if they had a wife and 5-6 brats? What would it be? My God, they can't take care of themselves without having a family. And then the people, who's going to pay for another big family? Lucky we pay for the priest that's there without paying for their family. So they better not have no priest getting married. They better forget it. If they can't be a priest without being married, then forget it. That's thinking more of the flesh than it is in the spirit.
Did you go to church when you lived in Detroit?
Yeah, I went to a Redeemer in St. Anne's. I was baptized at St. Leo's. I was all over the country.
What city did you live in?
What year?
Did you live right in Detroit, or what different city?
Yeah, we lived in Detroit where the park was burnt down. You know, the black people burned it all down. That's about where we lived. We lived down West Grand Boulevard, we have a new one there, and that's all. And where the Sacred Heart Seminary is, they even painted Jesus' face up on the statue there, black.
Yeah,
you know.
I saw that.
Well, yeah, you know that. Mm-hmm. Well, we lived all around in there. And then, you know where the Ambassador Bridge starts, 21st and Quarter, right there? Our store was right there. Right that corner. Ain't that strange?
Is it still there, or did they tear it down?
No. Oh yeah, they had to tear it all down, all that block and everything was flattened out, and they put the bridge up and all that. They had to have, but the churches, that Webster School, or like I said, Wingard, I don't know which, the Webster and Wingard is still there down there a couple blocks where I used to go when I was about 7 years old. I wonder if that, I think it's a Webster. They have to look something. Anybody go to the Detroit, the bridge, you know? Look down there and see what school that is nowadays. 21st and Quarter. Right.
How old were you when you got married?
23.
Mm-hmm. And
I was old enough to know better.
And how old was Grandpa?
23. We were both 23. I was 23 7th of January. He was 23 18th of March. I'm the old lady. And he was a kid. I was always. When I went with him, I thought he was 5 years older than me, at least, because I liked older men, you know. If I agreed I was older than him, I didn't even know it. I went with him 6 months, but he kissed me goodnight. 6 months. Yeah. He was right there in the chest. If he wanted to run around and go somewhere else, he sure could have did it. I thought you better know before he gets married, you know.
How long did you go with him before he got married?
About 6 years.
Did you meet him in high school?
No. Right in the ballpark. Charlie Zimmerman and him used to go to the Monroe Business University. I didn't go there. I think I went there after they did it. Or before. I didn't. But I met him there, and I'd go every night to the ballpark. I'd walk from Noble Avenue way out there to Navarre Field. Every night, walk there just like it was down the street. Nothing, getting nothing. Just nothing. Just like magic, the way you get there. And I don't thought of having a car or a bicycle or anything. You know, you just walking was just nothing to do that. Why, if somebody said walk across Monroe County, I would have walked. That didn't stop you. When you're young like that, Betty, far, just keep walking. Then we'd come back. We used to stop at the Monroe. It used to be the candy kitchen that day. And we'd go and get a nickel phosphate just to sit in there and talk with our friends, you know. Suck on that nickel phosphate because we didn't have any money for about 2 hours. And then we'd come home, you know. It was a lot of fun. And I used to scream and screech, but once my dad taught me that about the game, how to just play baseball, I thought it was wonderful. And I would yell and scream and screech. You know, for my team, when everybody would get up and do the dirty look and move, you know, and I'd holler all the louder. Just like I had my right mind. And then Russell would come here with Charlie Zimmerman. We all sit there, and my dad with my dad, so when Russell wanted to take me, I said, okay, you can take me tonight. And then one time, I was there first, I don't know, I didn't wait for them, because he had always milked the cows and at 6 o'clock, and he'd never get there, but it was late, you know. And I said, did you bring pot? And then he said, no, I can get some. I said, Pop, my dad. I was calling Pop. He thought it was some pot. I said, my dad, go over here, bring him or something. And that made him laugh. And it was good. But we used to have a lot of fun with baseball. Then I tell him to go home at 9 o'clock because I had to get up to work in the morning. I worked telephone. And I had him up there some mornings at 6. You know what that is, to get up early. So at 9 o'clock, I'd start saying, good night. It'd take him an hour to get going. By 10 o'clock, he'd leave. Then Grandma would say, Peter, you're going to get punished one of these days. Treating that poor boy so nasty. Good night. She locked me like that, you know. You're going to be punished. I said, well, I got to go to bed. Anyway, I get rid of him by 10 o'clock. Then I go to bed and I have to be up early because I had had my sleep. I was born tired, so I never did change. I was born tired. And so then his mother would say when she'd come to visit, Ruth, why do you keep that poor boy up so late? I can't get him up in the morning at 4 o'clock to milk the cows. She said, why do you keep him out? I keep him out. I said, I don't keep him out. He doesn't get home till after 2 o'clock. There he goes down to the beer garden on the way going home, visit with the proprietor and his wife. He'd sit there till 2 o'clock in the morning on the way going home. What was that place there? What was the name of it? Oh, it's that corner of LaSalle Road there. Anyway, it isn't there anymore now. Everlines, they called it. Everlines Beer Garden. He would sit there and talk and visit with the proprietor. He'd never go home to bed. So then she blamed me. There. And I said, well, I don't have him. He ain't my house at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I guess she understood after that. I said, he's visiting someplace else. So she found out that it was Everline. So he still wouldn't go to bed early. Russell never did all his life. Never he'd sit up home even. Sit up and no matter any excuse to sit up. And you think he never spent any time in bed at all. See, that way by the look of it. Of course, you never know who'd go around the house with 12 kids.
He must have spent a little time in bed.
Somebody goes. Yeah, you would think so.
That's 12 kids.
There was a Holy Spirit. No, but that was funny, though. I mean, he never did. He was like his dad. His dad never went to sleep either. He'd sleep in the chair all night. His mother was maybe at 4 o'clock in the morning. He'd go to bed. His dad was that way. Some people, he never wasted his life, like they say, like I do, in the sleeping. He never did. Russell was really on the ball, really on the go. You know, he thinks life is, at least did, thinks life is interesting, I guess, because he would be interested in people, and he would love to get in debates with things, with different people and different things, you know, and he'd love to be on the board of some kind of a commission, you know. He missed his calling is what he did. He should have been a mayor of the town or something like that. You know, he just missed his calling. Well, I guess he was just supposed to be like me, have 12 kids and call it a day. Because every baby was like a new doll at Christmas.
Did you have a hard time with all those kids running around?
A hard time with them running around?
Yeah.
No, they didn't run.
Did
around.
They get in the way?
Nope, I never let them get in the way. Did I, Geneva?
So they were good, huh?
They were good. I was blessed with very good babies and good little kids. There were none of many brats. No kidding, not because they're mine.
Did they ever fight?
Uh-uh. Just like Millie said, if I were to see this, she says, I would never believe it, you know. And my John and Tom, they were of an age, 15 months apart. You know, a lot of people thought they were twins. The only time they wrestle around is intermission on the TV. Then they roll around the floor again, you know. Never, no quarreling or fighting. We never did. Howard, Lillian, and I. We never did. We used to sit and watch the kids across the street fight. They had 10 kids over there, and boy, they did fight. And we'd sit and watch them. We'd just, our eyes bulge out of our head. We couldn't believe it. They brothers and sisters would fight. Why, we wouldn't even think of thinking a naughty word about one another. Strange. And my kids never quarreled. Now, some people think I'm just saying that. You know, I mean, it's hard to believe. They would. They were good.
Did they do things together? I mean, did they go places?
Yeah, they never bothered me. They were like, well, kids on board, or I can't such gift, or do this, or what. They just went and did what they wanted to do themselves, you know what I mean? They never bothered me. And different things, like, you know, Christmas was always a nice time, and they got a whole lot of stuff, and there's a lot of things we got, because there's a lot of kids, you know. But everybody was happy, you know, like that. And I don't know, we still were happy with our kids. They sure had a nice, they all want to come back home.
Did you have any bad experiences when you were younger?
When I was a little girl?
Yeah. Anything bad happen?
No, just that I was a crybaby in my lifetime. I was a little crybaby. Put my feet through the back of the chair when they're greased here, like a little something, lay on my belly and then rock myself to sleep. Mom said I cried all the time. I cried. They said it was from her. Well, then I would wake up if I was kind of sick that day or something, have a little slight fever or anything. I'd wake up screaming in the night. Terrified. Remember that, but what it was from, I don't know. I would be terrified. And they hold me, and the only thing that stopped me and shut my mouth was the smell of turpentine. Just that feeling of fear. Just that clouds of your brain, you know, just roll in on you. I would just be screaming. That's how terrified I was. After scorching, I had it once. I thought if I ever blew up and I had that, I would scream just as loud today as I would have been. Because it's such a terror. It's a terror that soon forms in your head.
Was it like a nightmare?
Like a nightmare. Yeah, it's a feeling. See, it's in you. It just turns over your brain and you're terrified. You don't know what. You don't know what, but it's a feeling of terror. That's an awful thing. Jim had it from when he was about 6 years old. And I knew it helped me, so I knew it helped him. And he got out of bed, he'd wake up and jump on the dresser, he jumped on the bed, I couldn't even catch him. That's how terrified that he was. I get the bottle of turpentine in there, smell it, so I grab him tight and put that under his nose, and that turpentine took that away. Wasn't that lucky that my mother, well, turpentine years ago was used for fever. And they say it's an inward fever, you know, causes that to go up in your head. So it's, or I'd sleep with a turpentine bottle under my pillow. I was getting up to, you know, 6, 7 years old, 8 years old. That turpentine had my hand like tight, just scared to death. I feel a kind of feeling sometimes I wouldn't even get to sleep. One night I was playing with my uncle and he stayed with us. Me and his fingers go on the wall like rabbits, you know. And I don't know if that scared me or that, but that set it off, that terror feeling. I started to cry and my mother and my father grabbed me and hold me. They just told me because I kept throwing myself, you know. But that is a terrible thing. That's the only thing I ever knew about them from the head. I mean, I was like a fever or something across me, terrified. But otherwise, I didn't have anything, just ordinary kid things. Just, I mean, have your relation die or something. But then a kid doesn't understand relation dying. I mean, it don't bother you. It bothers other people. Well, I did feel kind of bad when my cousin died. I think she was 29. And she died. She had a baby about 6 months pregnant. She died of a heart attack. And she was beautiful. Now that kind of, that was sad, but it still didn't bother me. I mean, I was 15. And kids don't. Nothing. Death doesn't bother children. It's, you know, no matter who dies, even my grandma died. I mean, I told her if she died first, she should come and see me. Let me know. And I said, if I die first, I'll come and see you. You know, that my grandma said, she said, okay. That's the time I went on my trip to Devil's Lake with my girlfriends. And she died while I was there. And I had a home the last proper weekend. But she never did come to see me. Maybe she'll still come here. You never know.
She might.
Yeah. And I was 22. She was 80 years old. Yeah.
How old were you when the Piers were popular?
Well, you know, about, well, 10, 11, ever since when I was a little kid. Piers was going all the time when I was little.
Did a lot of people get mad when they stopped them?
I suppose. I mean, I was still. They stopped them when I was about, I don't know, 50, maybe around 20, they stopped. They were younger than that, 15. It wasn't long after yet. Well, they start moving the state park down there, moving it over like down, you know, making it, and then they took the tracks away, and there's no more going down there, except that side road there, you know, the extra road went down that way. Oh, it was, oh, they never said much. I don't know. Those buildings are all getting old and falling down anyway. And then they had it teared down that wasn't down. And there was a big hotel down there, and I was a little real little. I think my Grandpa Mauer was one of the stockholders in it or something, a big shop down there. And they had a hotel. I forget the name of it now, you know, what they called it, Royal Hotel? I don't know. I don't just remember the Lotus Hotel. I knew that it's the Lotus Hotel. He said something down, he said one time he had a big dinner down there. And the passing soup around, the girl come with the soup and dumped it right in his lap. Oh, the soup! Oh, the manager flew out, gonna fire right on the spot. Grandpa says, nope, it's just an accident, forget it. Forget it, don't fire her at all. It's an, you know, an accident, somebody else would have been, you know, fire, you know. But they didn't fire, and, but it was just an awful, terrible accident. You know what I mean, all that. You know, soup all dressed to kill, you know, and then somebody threw a soup in your lap. It was an accident. that things happen like that. But them days was, I had wonderful childhood. I had wonderful mother and father. I was lucky I had such a wonderful mother and father. They wouldn't understood me and been so patient with me. I was a stinkeroo. I mean, I was a crybaby. And nervous, you know, from your nerves. But my mother and father seemed to understand me. And they just were wonderful to me. I never forgive them. They're just wonderful. You know, everybody had as good a mother and father as I had. Yeah, they could be happy. I mean, my childhood, I always wanted to do this. I never wanted to grow up. Never wanted to grow up. I just give myself a year each year. Oh, one more year. Stretch one more year. And then I will. Then they can call me in. Now I'm just another year. Maybe not another year yet. You never know. God must want me to hang around for some reason. Because Russell's gone. Dave is gone. The boy. All the minis are gone. All the minis are gone. Hard to believe.
Well, he wants you to stay around for the grand minis.
Yeah. And Rachel's gone. And my cousin, well, it's my cousin's cousin, died last week, Opal Kuzno. Went to Holy Redeemer School with her. Went here to St. Mary's with her. I just couldn't believe she was gone. She just 72. She's just young. And then poor Mr. Betts dying. My friend of the telephone, you know. I just couldn't believe it. Put out after a rain with her little panties on. Just little panties, you know, playing in the side of the road there where there's, you know, cars didn't go by there fast like they do now, you know. And when it rained, it would settle there in their little cinders, you know, and they'd play out there. It was so cute. They'd be so nice, you know. They were all good kids. They're all good kids. Everybody. Of course, like I said, I was lucky. Everybody don't get good babies like that. Like poor Babe now, she had Wayne, and he had what you call a 10-month colic. He cried night and day. They did take shifts, Grandma Minnie and Grandpa Minnie. They stayed up all night, and Babe and Pete would sleep days, and then they would start while the kid lived at 10 months. Have a kid like that.
I babysat for kids that cried constantly.
Yes, never stopped. You wonder how they, but they got fatter, bigger, grower, and cry. Never stopped crying. Now that's terrible. When I think of that, she might as well have 20 kids. I mean, what she put in with that one thing, you know what I mean? So when I feel I'm lucky, little Russell slept about 20 hours out of 24. I never knew he was there, you know. And the same way with your dad, he was just as good. Just as good, and they'd sleep every afternoon. And Jimmy, he was a more rambunctious one of the gang. He could climb before he could walk. And they say, well, they learn it from the others, you know. Well, that's not true. It's in the person. Dog locked in some place.
About Jim being...
Oh, yeah. He could climb, like I said, before he could walk. He's around 10 months older, and I looked around for Jim. I said, where's Jim? During the last time, the old Bill there, you know, Jimmy, looking all around. You know where he was? On top of the mantle. Sitting in the corner by the fishbowl. He pushed the chair up again and climbed up there. Sit down, look at me. I never dreamed to look up yet. You know what I mean? I wasn't looking for him on the ceiling yet. And there he was. So I took him down.
How many rooms did your house have when you had all these little kids?
3 bedrooms. Tiny kitchen. It wasn't small. And dining room. living room, nice size living room. We called it the red room. Remember the head end of the red room?
You only had 3 bedrooms when all 12 kids lived home?
Nobody was crowded where the Geneva. 7 boys in one room upstairs and 5 girls in the other, and Dad and I downstairs.
They must have been big rooms then, huh?
Not so big. We had 2 double beds under the front where it went down in it. 2 double beds. There was 3 double beds in the boys' room and a single bed. And 2 double beds in the girls' room and a single bed. And nobody was crowded. And I remember them big drawers I had in Geneva. The 6 in each room. And that cupboards and all the shelves. We had all the shelf space and door space we'd ever want. With all the kids. We didn't have too much for the hang up stuff. But we sure could put a lot of stuff away. You know, fold them up and put them away. But that was a super house. And just, if I ever got rich, I would like to buy it back. And have a nice, the basement fixed up pretty and have everybody come back home. Have a big party. Wouldn't that be nice? What a dreamer I am. I got it. But that was nice. And the kids, like I say, they didn't go fighting with each other. They weren't allowed to. We weren't allowed to fight in the school. We wouldn't even think of it in the first place. They said we'd be shocked at ourselves if we did. And there was no such thing as quarreling with your brother or your sister. There was no such thing. And you always say, my dad, I got no trouble with my 2 you have with your whole 12. You know, she'd say, you know, so surely you just fight with Jim something terrible. Well, I never heard anybody argue. Settle it right away. What is the trouble? You know, get together on it. Don't argue. Don't be stupid or act stupid, but settle things in a grown-up way. And I always treated the kids like they were equal. Dad, please, thank you. I never looked down on my kids. I never. They were same as me. I was not a little kid or a little person. I just treat them like I treat you or you treat me. Because I think a lot of kids, you and your parents talk to their children like they're dogs. You go to the stores of town and you see them, they won't talk nice to their kid. The kid ain't doing nothing wrong. Come in. Do they? Whatever. Just that tone of voice. That's enough to make a kid right away get a chip on the shoulder. Well, I always talk to my kids like I want them to talk to me. Friendly terms all the time. Decent. With respect. You got it. You don't talk even from a little baby. You start a little baby. From the time you put diapers on them. And if they're going to wiggle, like in trying to put pants on, you know you can't. Put pants on a wiggling kid. Tap them like that on the butt. No, no. Your voice. No, no. They know. They're not dumb. They're smart when they're little. And they'll lay still. You put the pants on. You don't have to go standing on one leg trying to put pants on the kid acting up and twisting around like a super green bean or something, you know? I mean, that's so true. She didn't know what to do with a girl on a vacation or where to go or what to do. And all I did was sit there and look out the window or something. You know what I mean? That was no fun.
Did you go on any trips in high school or anything?
The only place I ever went was the Devil's Lake with my girlfriends. I got bit by a spider on the eye. And I was like a baseball bat. And that's when Grandma died. Grandma St. Peter, that when I was down there. But that's the only time I ever went anyplace. You know, to tell the truth, I never went no place by myself in my whole life. In my whole life, and I never went any place. I mean, when we did go, we were going to Cedar Point, there Russell and I, and there Lillian and Henry, I think it was with this thing, Henry with Charlie. And we got a flat tire. We never did get to Cedar Point. And three different times he went to Toledo to see the in the village, you know, with the statues and the, what do you call it, the artistic work. Every time we'd get there, the doors would be just shut. Three different times, and we gave up. Three different times. Never got to see any. Then one time we were going to Walbridge Park. We got lost and never did get to Walbridge Park. All lost on the other side of Toledo. We always get lost in Toledo. And come late for whatever was there. Only thing I remember is the Michigan Theater. We go there. It was beautiful. That was like a palace. Do you remember? You remember it. It was just opening. It was beautiful, just like a, like in England. Or beautiful. It's just something to take your breath away. It's so beautiful. And so was the Fisher Theater, too. That was more mummy style. You know, more. Have you ever been to Fisher Theater? Well, Fisher Theater. You've been to Fisher Theater. You know, the mummy style. That's what I call it. That was beautiful, too. But you know what I always missed and I always loved, could have afforded it? Those community players and the plays in Detroit on the stage, especially in history, right out real on the stage, if they aren't thrilling, they're more thrilling than a movie or any day could be. But look at the price you pay to see them. And if you want to see them and hear them, you've got to sit up in front. You know what I mean?
How much did it cost back then to see them?
Well, then days it was $7-$8, I imagine, a piece. You know what I mean? Nobody had money like that.
So now it must be about 20.
Yeah, $20 a piece. Wouldn't it be genius, huh? But that is something to see, honey. Get a rich guy if you find one. For gosh sakes, now don't you believe that, Geneva? You can always learn to love them. You know, I'm giving up. I just mean if you want something beautiful in this world like that, not that you love does come first, I don't mean that.